Hello there, football fans. Welcome to the Soccer Central podcast. I'm James Sharman, joined as always by John Molinaro in this March the 17th. Big show as always today. Shortly, we're going to go to the hub of all things football, Leicester City. We're going to talk with journalist James Sharp about just what is going on in that town right now. Insanity in the Premier League. They are on, I'm going to say on the cusp. I think 8 games left. Cusp sounds about right. Maybe it's a bit early to use the word cusp.
No, but I don't think so.
Yeah, on the cusp of a title. Okay, yeah. On the cusp of a title. We'll explain what it's meant to that city, what it's going to mean to that city and that club moving forward to what will be, I think, a fascinating summer as far as transfer wheeling in the Premier League in particular. We'll also later today talk to Sonia Missio, who's well known to most of you Canadian soccer types. She has a great new initiative geared towards female journalists. So that's later in today's show. But we have to start today, J-Mo, talking about the Champions League this week. You're looking at me with those doughy eyes. You're watering up. You're welling up. It's been a tough 24 hours for you.
It has.
Really tough. Juventus, Bayern Munich. You wrote about it and you used the word epic. And I think it's a fantastic word because that was an epic encounter. That will go down as one of the great two-legged matchups in Champions League history. Up 2-0, down 2-0, 2-2s, 3-2s, 4-2s. Oh, J-Mo, what happened yesterday? This is Juventus, right? They're renowned for their defense. We know that. They're missing Chiellini, we know that. But they're up 2-0. They've got the quarterfinals in their grasp. They can feel it sweating in their palms. And they let it go. It slips out.
Yeah.
Bayern do what Bayern do, scoring goals and advancing.
Well, I mean, a couple of things. One, I mean, 2-0 at half, but it could have easily been 3 or 4-0 for you.
One offside goal,
which was incorrectly called off. Not that I'm complaining. I don't want to make excuses. And then Manuel Neuer makes an incredible save in the dying seconds. And that could have been, you know, potentially the third goal. So I'd have been at 3 goals at halftime at that point, then it would have been over. I don't see Bayern coming back. So, you know, Juventus didn't sort of close it out and, you know, full credit to Bayern. They made some, changes at the second half. I think Douglas Costa was sensational in that final 45 minutes. And it was, you know, his ball in, for, Lewandowski that, we were on the first goal that kind of, you know, cued the comeback. Yeah. So, I mean, I think the other thing too was, you know, everyone's was kind of making the point about, well, you know, Juventus was missing Paulo Dybala, which was a key guy up front, and Giorgio Chiellini in defense, which is a key guy. But I maintain that the biggest absence was Claudio Marchisio, because as especially over the last 20 minutes, as Bayern was kind of pouring on that pressure, Juventus really needed a midfield outlet who could have, you know, held on to possession, give them some relief, act as that pressure valve, and then spray balls forward to sort of teammates in terms of launching the counterattack. Marchisio would have been able to do that. You know, unfortunately, missing the game through injury. So I think he was the key absence for Juventus. But you know what? I mean, look, full credit to Bayern. I mean, they fought back valiantly, and you know, Pep, you know, made the key changes in the second half. You know, bringing on Thiago and I'm trying to think what the other one was he made. I can't remember off the top of my head, but you know, they were absolutely brilliant those 45 minutes, and you know, another 90 seconds, and Juventus would have won. But that's the way the game goes so far.
There's this word coming out now of, you know, what was said by Pep before that extra time period, and apparently he was threatening. Is my mic on now? There we go. He was threatening the team with their lives, and you cannot lose this tie now, because from his standpoint, Pep's standpoint, you're gonna be thinking to yourself, you know, I'm leaving. I haven't yet won the European Championship with Bayern Munich. Yeah, I've dominated Germany, but of course they're going to dominate Germany.
Sure.
If he'd lost this game, I think a lot of people would have said that his tenure there was a failure, which I don't agree with.
Right.
I wouldn't say it's been a huge success, because he hasn't got European glory just yet. He might still this year, of course, although I think it's doubtful with the way Barcelona's playing. But I thought that was a huge win for him and his reputation at Bayern Munich.
Yeah, you know, I'm of two minds on this, James. Like, I'm with you. I don't think it would have, you know, I don't think his while his sort of tenure at Bayern hasn't been glowingly successful, I think it's harsh to call it a failure. And yeah, I can understand sort of making the argument about if they bowed out in the round of 16, it would have been, wouldn't have looked favorably on his sort of legacy there. But I mean, again, he's Pep Guardiola. He's one of the best coaches in the world. He's going to Manchester City next year. He would have survived.
Yeah.
In the grand scheme of things, he would have survived. It wouldn't have been the end of the world for
them. But the haters out there would have used that as their excuse to hammer the guy, right? Not that he cares about it.
Right. And at the end of the day, that doesn't mean anything.
But when you look at his tenure at Bayern Munich, you know, regardless of whether he wins the Champions League this year or not, trophies aside, what he's transformed that team into as far as a performance, a style, is incredible. And that to me makes it the success that it is.
Yeah.
Because, listen, Jupp Heynckes had a great team as well, and he won the treble. And how do you beat that? Well, you just do it again by playing a better brand of football, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's done this, the latter part. They are playing a better brand of football. I mean, they're just the most fun team to watch. I would rather watch Bayern Munich than Barcelona.
Personally. Really? Oh, yeah. Interesting.
They're incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm no tactician. You know that. You know, I find tactics a little bit laborious at times. Mm. But you watch Bayern Munich play, and you're just tantalized by what he's trying next, who's playing where, the movement. Mm. It's brilliant.
Yeah, they're entertaining team.
So for that alone, you know, I would say it has been somewhat of a success.
Right.
But hey, he's won numerous trophies in Germany, so we'll give him that as well. But yeah, incredible match, and I do feel for you because I thought Juve had it. I really do.
I did too.
For them to give up those goals the way they did was very unlike them. So, but I think you're right. Missing that midfield presence of Marquinhos was huge. Barcelona, they rolled over Arsenal
3-1
in the way. In the end. That Suarez goal was pretty, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was very nice.
Volley just very inside the area, kind of went the opposite way you think it would go.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah,
brilliant.
Great finish.
More pressure on Arsene Wenger. I'm going to ask you, because you're an Arsenal fan as far as that's your Premier League team.
Yep.
And I haven't actually asked you, I don't think, specifically about Wenger. Like, do you think he needs to move out of that job now?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. If by some miracle they come back and they win the Premier League title, then obviously give him another year. But I'm starting to think, yeah, it's probably his time to give him the heave-ho and start anew. I just get the sense that Arsenal has become incredibly complacent and just overcome by this sort of malaise. And I think it's in large part to him. So it might be a time for a fresh look on this team.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a topic for the last few months, years maybe, and it's going to continue before the end of the season. Yeah. He's not going to step aside, though, I don't think. He seems so ambitious to make that group work. He has such faith in that group.
Right.
That, as you mentioned, is the issue there. But I don't know if the ownership have it in them to fire him or to push him.
Well, then that's a pretty disturbing issue too. Then.
Very much so. Very much so. And the others, of course, City advanced over Kiev, a 0-0 match there.
Man, that was dire to watch.
It really was, yeah. They did the damage in the first leg, but yeah, not good. And Atletico 0, PSV 0.
I'll tell you, I think Atletico, first of all, PSV, very harsh result on them because I thought they played really well and they almost nicked it. But I'll tell you, Atletico, I wouldn't write them off. I mean, everyone's talking about Barcelona and Bayern, but 12 goals conceded in La Liga this year by Atletico Madrid.
It's incredible defense, isn't it?
They are tough to break down.
Yep.
They're going to be a tough opponent, a tough out. For
and if anyone can beat Barcelona.
It's them. Absolutely. It's absolutely them.
Yep. Yeah, so we'll find out. The draw goes on Friday morning.
Yeah, 7 a.m. Bright and
we'll,
early.
We'll break that down a little bit for you on Monday on the podcast, and certainly we'll, I'm sure, get to it during the broadcast this weekend. Now, to the Premier League. It's time to get down and dirty, the nitty-gritty. Who's going to win this thing? And it's going to be Leicester. So let's head to Leicester right now. James Sharp is a journalist with the Leicester Mercury. James, welcome to the show. And I got to ask you this. If I asked you this question this time last year, how does it feel to have Leicester in first place in the table? How would you have reacted? I mean, this is, for me, it's on the cusp of being the biggest sport shocker ever in any sport. Now, maybe I'm biased, but ever, I would say. How are you dealing with this and the exposure your town's getting?
Well, I would agree with you as well. I think it would be like one of the most incredible things in team sport. But again, I'm also quite biased because I'm a Leicester fan as well as being a reporter for the paper. Yeah, it's crazy. And I think even now, with 8 games to go, there's now still a sense of as much of a surrealism now as there would have been had you have said to me at the end of last season that Leicester would be where they are now. Although at the end of last season, with the way they finished with 7 wins out of the last 9 games, at the end of that, a lot of fans were saying, "Oh, hang on, like we are this side is good enough to match it with kind of the best teams. They were 1-0 up against Chelsea at half-time before who lost that game, who won the league at a canter. So I think there was a general sense that this team could actually achieve something. But being top is, yeah, that's way, way ahead of anything that anyone could ever possibly have imagined.
It's an important point that you raise, because I think, yeah, and it's one that I've made repeatedly, is that pretty much since whatever it was, last March or April, that Leicester has been consistently the best team in the English top flight. I mean, the way they finished that season last year to avoid relegation, and by all means, they were dead and buried from what it appeared to be. I mean, they really kind of brilliantly fought back, and they've been just the best team in England. And sort of getting back to that late finish and sort of carrying over to the new year, how much credit does Nigel Pearson here to deserve in terms of, you know, setting the table, so to speak, for Claudio Ranieri?
He deserves a hell of a lot. And because this is a team that Pearson basically put together over Pearson and his squad and his staff, like Steve Walsh Sr., his assistant manager, who is still a key role in that backroom staff. They put together this team, coming in after Sven-Göran Eriksson had come in and basically thrown money at a lot of aging has-beens who were looking for kind of like a final payoff. So that kind of just chucking money at players just hadn't worked. And so Pearson came in and had to get rid of all these kind of big-time Charlies on far too much money who clearly weren't good enough for a championship scrap, and basically build from scratch a team that could survive in the championship, push for the Premier League, and then survive in the Premier League, which obviously they did in getting promotion. And even last season when they were kind of dead and buried at the bottom, they weren't like Villa were this year, where you looked at them and thought, these are useless. Like, they've got no... Like, Villa now are just spineless and pitiful and show no fight whatsoever. Whereas when Leicester were bottom, there was... The most frustrating thing was that this was a team that didn't look too bad. I mean, mm-hmm. they were always in games, and they just either lacked that bit of experience or bit of know-how to kind of get over the line and get the points. So that was unbelievably frustrating. But what Pearson did really, really well, I'm not sure many other managers would have done this or been able to do this, was they maintained the team spirit that you see. So it's such a key role now. He maintained that team spirit, and to be able to keep a side that is bottom for 5 months and keep them believing that they can still actually get out of this mess when everyone else around them thought they were dead and buried deserves great credit for that. But then this season, Ranieri has been able to take that side and take them on to the next level by a whole host of different reasons, which I'm sure we'll come to.
Yeah, I mean, I remember last year watching that Monday night game against Manchester United, and I think it was 5-2, Leicester won. It was an amazing game. Vardy was everywhere. And I remember thinking, man, this is a pretty good team, and there's no way they should be where they're at. And throughout the campaign, they were very unfortunate until that last, 6 weeks or so. I want to talk to you about the ownership. You mentioned before under Sven, they threw some money at some players. So, this is not a tiny club, bare bones. There is some money there. But at the same time, what was the ownership's ambition when they first acquired Leicester City? Surely it would have been sustainability in the Premier League, yeah, but not this level of success.
No, I remember there's a story that did the round. They spoken to the press in Thailand where they'd said that they want to get Leicester to be fighting for Europe within 3 seasons, I think they said that after Leicester had been promoted, and people kind of scoffing at it and going, come on, mate, let's behave yourselves. But look, I mean, it's kind of it's working, but clearly they never expected Leicester to get to where they are now in so much space of time. What they have been is incredibly patient. There were times under Pearson's ownership, Pearson's kind of managerial stints, where they went on some terrible runs. In the championship season, there was a terrible, terrible run which almost ended them in missing out in the playoffs. And they could easily have sacked him then. Other owners would have sacked managers by then. And also last season, when they were bottom for so long, even Pearson joked in press conferences that if had he been another manager under a different regime, under a different club, he wouldn't be where he wouldn't be there. So they are extremely patient. Ranieri said when he came in, he said that the owners, the first question, well, one of the first questions the owners said to him was, will you still stay with us if we go down? Which Ranieri said he found a very surprising question and something that he found quite refreshing, really. So they've been key there. So they're quite quiet people. I mean, obviously, they're hugely successful businessmen in their own country. They're billionaires. So there's plenty of money there. But they're not the kind of owner that likes to stick their nose in and talk about that they want team selection here and there. They've been very patient and take a back seat and just let the people who know what they're doing do what they know what they're talking about, which is kind of refreshing, really, in this day of foreign ownership.
How difficult do you think it will be, James, for the ownership to maintain a lot of these players next season? Because we've seen it so often before where a team becomes very successful and then, you know, during the summer transfer window, the top stars get picked off one by one by, you know, the likes of Barcelona or some of the top clubs in the world. And there's some incredibly talented players with Leicester, aside from Jamie Vardy, you know, Riyad Mahrez. And I've been very impressed with Conte, the young Frenchman. Is this something that Leicester should be worried about? I mean, do you get a sense that there's going to be, you know, a lot of transfer offers coming in the window? And how likely will Leicester sort of...
You're raining on the parade here, Jamie.
Well, I'm not raining, but I'm just interested okay. how difficult will it be them to keep this team together?
Well, it's refreshing, isn't it? It's nice to sit here and think that teams like Barcelona are going to bid for Leicester City's players.
I mean, had you right, exactly.
Said that, had you said that to us like how many seasons ago when the club was looking at administration and they didn't even know if there was going to be a club in the future and they were languishing in League One, and had you kind of tapped me on the shoulder and said, oh, in however many years' time there's going to be questions asked about whether Barcelona want one of your players. I mean, it's ridiculous even the fact that we are here anyway. And it's a flattering question. I think had Leicester been, say, I don't know, like fourth, fifth, sixth, that kind of, not sure whether it's going to be Champions League or Europa League section, it might have been more of a concern. Clearly, there are teams that can offer Leicester's players, like Riyad Mahrez, a hell of a lot more money. Vardy's new contract is reportedly on about kind of 80 grand a week, which is huge for Leicester, like humongous for Leicester, but is pales in comparison when you look at the kind of wages that Rooney or Aguero is on. But I think what the key is going to be, and Ranieri said this when he's asked about it in press conferences, is that, yeah, fair enough, you might get interest from some so-called big clubs, but they have there's no system to say that they will be regulars in that team. Right? If they stay at Leicester, they will be playing Champions League football and will be playing week in, week out. They are as Ranieri says, they are the kings at Leicester. So why would you want to go and hold the suitcase, is what he said in his press conference, at another team? So I think that is going to be kind of crucial to Leicester, whether Leicester kind of keep their best players. I'm not concerned. Speaking as a Leicester City fan, I'm not concerned that Leicester are going to lose all their best players and it's all going to go pear-shaped, because I think players like Vardy, they realise, I think they know that here they are the main man. They're going to be playing Champions League football at a team where they are the main man. So I don't see why they would want to move on.
Mm-hmm.
But also, if worse comes to worse and they get picked off and it's all looking doom and gloom, I still have enough faith in the recruitment setup at Leicester to say that there's nothing to say that they wouldn't be able to find players and recruit players of the quality that could kind of come in and fill their shoes.
You're right. I mean, the scouting network system they have there obviously has proven itself big time. So. And Vardy also is, what, 29 or thereabouts now? He's not a younger player, and he's obviously a late bloomer. And last year, like I said, I quite enjoyed him. Didn't score that many goals, but is this a blip? You know, we're going to find out whether it's one of those big years, and then he'll come back down to earth next year. James, what is the vibe like around Leicester? I mean, I know obviously it's a big rugby town as well, the Tigers, but I imagine at this point Leicester City is making all the copy in all the papers, all the headlines, and all the buzz around the water cooler. Surely,
yeah, it is. It's great for it's great for the city, and we've had so many people kind of come to us to speak to us as the local newspaper what it's been like to cover such an incredible kind of journey. Obviously, you guys are interested in it, and we've had phone calls from America and Italy, and Danish TVs come into the place, and there's countries from all over the world are taking interest in speaking to us, but also there's national television companies and international television companies are coming in and talking to fans around the city about how great this is. And wherever you go now, you go into coffee shops and restaurants all around the city, and all that people are talking about, you overhear conversations, all the people are talking about at the minute is Leicester City and the position they're in and whether they're going to go on to win the league and have they got their passports ready and are they ready for their European tours. And it's just it's such a great place and to be at the minute, and it's just, and hopefully it will continue that way.
So the big question, James, are they going to do it? Are they going to hold on and win the title? Be honest now.
So many people. No, I can't, because I've been a Leicester fan for so long. that Leicester, of all the teams, are the one that they're so capable of snatching despair and from the jaws of glory. I've been here so many times. Well, not here, not so far up the division that they are now, but this is Leicester after all, and we speak to lots of fans, and they're petrified now. So it should be exciting, shouldn't it? Leicester in this.
Are they enjoying it? Are they too scared to enjoy it?
I think we're now at the scared point. I think the turning point. I think for that was after they'd beaten Man City. Yes, they'd lost to Arsenal, but then they went up against Norwich at the beginning of this run that we're in now of games that are winnable. And champions, to win the league, you have to win these games. And Leicester have always been a team where you will back them against the bigger teams. But then when it comes to winning the games you're expected to win, Leicester have always, 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 for whatever reason it is, found them the most difficult to win. And I think at this point now, it's getting scary. After they won the Man City game and they became favourites to win the title, From all of the start of the season, it's been, oh, this is amazing, let's enjoy it while we can, and it's this brilliant thing to watch. Now it is genuinely scary. I mean, I spent most of the Newcastle game staring at my keyboard because I couldn't bear to watch what was going on around. So yeah, it's petrifying. And I'm trying not to say they're going on to win the league. I've seen, if I take my kind of blue-tinted spectacles off, there's nothing about what I've seen in Leicester's performances throughout this season that can suggest that they will not go on to win the league.
I think you're right.
They can win by battering ram to hammer down opponents with this kind of swashbuckling, cavalier, counter-attacking style. But then they've also shown now in recent games with their kind of, it's been like 3-1-0 wins. Their last three victories have been by 1-0 margin. They've shown that they've got the intricacy to pick open teams that park the bus, and they can win when they're not playing well. So nothing has told me that they can't go on to win the league, but there's still that part of me that is refusing to tell myself that it's going to happen, because then it will be petrifying, and I don't think I'll be able to watch.
You know, it was the Man City game was the point for me, that moment where I stopped looking at Leicester as being Leicester, and as instead they were now a legitimate contender to win it. And I know you can't think of this way, but I think they're going to win. Jay Mothy here,
I do.
Going to win. Danny Dicchio, Craig Forrest, our other analysts here, they are saying they're going to win. So whatever that means.
Ferguson's saying it as well.
Yeah. Sit back and enjoy it, James. Thank you so much for this, mate.
I will try.
Maybe we'll talk to you once you've lifted the trophy in May.
In 8 games' time.
8 games' time. Yeah. Leicester City.
And I'll come back and say I knew it all along.
Premier League champions. Can't wait for it. All right, James, thank you so much.
Not a problem, but pleasure being on.
That's James Sharp of the Leicester Mercury. Follow James on Twitter at the Sharp End. That's Sharp with an E, end.
I can't even imagine what it must be like for him. Do you know what I mean? Like to be,
No clue. In that city right now,
it just absolutely must be buzzing.
Especially when you're, you know, a beat reporter like James and a huge fan.
Sure.
And when you're writing, you know this, you have to keep your heart out of it.
Right, absolutely.
To a certain degree. You've got to write with your head.
Yep.
But man, it's got to be difficult not to let that heart slip in there.
Yeah.
Man, but what an, I mean, I think it's going to be one of those years with that the likes of James will look back and go, what an incredible experience those last eight games
once were. In a lifetime.
At the time, it was miserable. I was terrified. I didn't enjoy it. But boy, looking back, it was amazing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it really is a once in a lifetime kind of, you know, season for them. And what a great story, too. I mean, we're how long do we always complain about it being so boring? Not just in the Premier League, but in the in the top European leagues, about the same teams being in the running. Leicester City on the verge of winning
and
the
Premier League title. We're not even discussing now that, Champions League, right? They're in the Champions League.
Yeah.
Right? That's not even a
foregone conclusion.
Conversation right now.
Right.
It's about Leicester City. Can they win? And if they do slip up and Spurs, which is very possible, if Spurs do
that'd
find a way.
That'd be a great story too.
It'd be a great story. But there'd be such disappointment over Leicester because they only finished second in the Premier
League. Yeah, I know. Wouldn't that be, oh God. How fabulous has this been? Like, my God.
You know what? People say it's been a weak season from a quality standpoint.
I don't think so.
It's been the most enjoyable season for many years.
Yeah.
It really has. Because you can't fathom what's going to happen at any given week. Great individual performances, great goals.
Yeah.
Great drama and these kind of surprises.
And that's why it's, you know, you hear about, oh, well, it's kind of been an off season for United. It's been an off season for Chelsea. It's been an off season for City. You know, that's why, you know, Leicester is kind of in the running. I don't buy that at all. They have been, as I said, since last March or April when they went on their run, they've consistently been the best team in England. They're fully deserving of this. It wouldn't have mattered to me what United or Chelsea would have done.
They'd be up there regardless.
They'd be up there regardless. Yeah. So this has been absolutely brilliant.
Three losses.
Three. Who would have predicted three? I mean, my
God. Who scored the most goals? Leicester.
Yeah.
Right? Tied with Spurs. Yeah.
And well, Ranieri too. I mean, how great is that too?
I was saying that yesterday on the show on Tim and Sid. I was saying, I'm enjoying it for him.
Yeah.
He's been so maligned over the years.
He has.
Unfairly.
Yeah.
And he's been around the block, this guy. He knows football better than anyone. And he's been hammered down by punks in the past. And now he's getting his chance to show, yeah, I can manage properly to a title. I really hope. When I see him lifting that trophy, I have a smile on my face ear to ear. I really will.
That would be
one
great.
Of the good guys.
I think you set it up aptly, James. He is really one of the good guys in world football. So delighted for him if it happens. I hope so. Keeping my fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, moving on now to some more domestic football. Good friend of the game in this country. Good friend of the show. Sonia Mizio joins us. You can follow Sonia on Twitter at Sonia Mizio. Sonia. You have a new project. It sounds actually really interesting, very progressive, I think is the way to say it. It's called Unusual Efforts, Soccer by Women for Everyone. Now, you're fundraising for this initiative on Indiegogo, so please, after you hear Sonia, I'm assuming you'll buy into what she's saying, get on there and donate if you can. Sonia, exactly what is it and what is it about?
Well, it kind of started as this pipe dream between me and Kirsten Schwalitz, and it just sort of happened one night when we were talking about how we didn't know other women writers, and we kind of got to the root of the problem by saying that, you know, there wasn't really that many opportunities, and you kind of get overshadowed by all these big male writers, and there's no one really around to mentor you, and we both sort of carved our own path. We're not sure if that's still sort of the way to go, if it's the best route. So then we were joined by Elizabeth Cotillon, and we decided to create this, I guess, project, for lack of a better word, that was going to start almost as a mentorship for female writers getting into the business. And what's sort of nice about us is that it's not another soccer website to submit articles and whatnot. We're acting more as a platform for women to showcase their work to eventually be picked up by other institutions and other organizations. So it's sort of nice that, you know, places like Sportsnet talk to us because these could be their future writers that they wouldn't know otherwise without the sort of foundation pushing them out. So it's sort of a two-fold project where we have the website and then we're also releasing a journal. So it's going to be either a print or an electronic version, depending on which one you choose. And we're fundraising for this to both pay our writers equal and fair wages and to produce actual physical work.
So it's interesting. It should be pointed out because I think people will hear about this and look at it on the face and say, oh, so this is a website just about women's soccer, but it's not. It's about, you're going to be covering all kinds of soccer, both men and women, domestic and foreign, but it's more, it's about providing a platform and an opportunity for women to kind of gain a foothold in soccer journalism.
Exactly. We have genderless topics and genderless readership. It's just our writers that happen to be female. And one point that we really want to push is that just because you are a female writer, you're not writing about female issues, which, you know, you get to the World Cup, the Women's World Cup, and that's when you see a lot of female writers emerge. But we want this for all of our expertise and knowledge and our passions that don't necessarily align with women's soccer.
What about you personally? I mean, because obviously, as I said before, this is about providing women with opportunities who, you know, would otherwise find it difficult to gain a foothold in soccer journalism. Has that been your personal experience? Have you found it hard on a personal level to kind of get published and whatnot?
Kind of. I mean, for me, I've had a lot of good experiences within the industry. But all of my mentors, all of my edits, everybody I've ever turned to has been men. And at first, that didn't really occur to me until I started talking to Kirsten about this. And we realized that there are no females to turn to. And the only females really that you see predominantly in the industry are on television. And if you're a writer, that doesn't really help. So we can offer mentorship if we are able to put into contact with people and connect them to editors and look for specific works or writing that they're doing and who would best fit with that. We just want to create a global network.
I mean, you're right. There are, you know, some female writers who write about women's soccer. The Equalizer.com, for example, is a website dedicated to women's soccer issues. And there's some great writers on there. You know, we know Haji Jahal,
yeah,
our journalist, for example, does a great job there. She writes for other publications too. But do you find yourself then very much typecast? When you approach, be it a website or a newspaper, and you say, you know, I'm a soccer journalist, I'm a soccer writer, do they, generally speaking, assume, well, in that case, you're just writing about women's issues then, not about the game as a whole?
100%. Like, I write a lot about the politics of FIFA, and I'm always thrown into this gender politics of FIFA, which I do find interesting, but that's not necessarily the structural view that I look at it. So I think kind of what pigeonholed me in that is when I asked Sepp Blatter about what are his thoughts on, like, women's position in office at FIFA, and it kind of dovetailed this whole thing where all of a sudden I was writing about women in FIFA, which is interesting, but it's not my area of expertise, I guess, for lack of a better word. Or you get to the Women's World Cup and all of a sudden all these offers come pouring in where people are asking you to write. But honestly, other than Canada and the States, I don't know that much about women's soccer, which might be terrible, but like I also don't know that much about Spanish soccer that I should.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say that, you do get pigeonholed a lot and you write one article that may have a specific topic and all of a sudden that's what everybody thinks you write about. Whereas I much rather write about low-level Italian soccer.
Right, that's such a Udinese.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
I wouldn't talk if I were you.
No. For people who know, Sonia's an Udinese fan, I'm a Juventus fan. We're always kind of going at each other on Twitter, even though she doesn't have much to really brag about, but that's another story.
Talk right now, if I were you.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah, good point. Good point.
How's the response been so far? I mean, you launched this project, was it about a month ago, I want to say?
About 2 weeks ago.
Okay, and what's the response been so far?
It has been overwhelming. Not even just financial-wise. I'm talking more about the emails we're getting from people saying how much they appreciate it, how they are supporting it because they have children and they want their kids to grow up in a field that is more gender equal, I guess, for lack of a better word, how people are just excited that they see the names attached and they like us just as journalists in general, so they're happy that we're collaborating on a project. I mean, people are really excited about this, which is very exciting for us, obviously, but there is an interest out there. So hopefully our fundraising project works and we start churning this out and it's a great response.
It's a great idea. I mean, there's so much talent out there, you know, that just needs that opportunity to get exposed. And certainly it's unfairly, sadly, but much more difficult for a woman than it is for a man currently. in this media culture. So, Sonia, can you let the listeners know, how do they get in touch? How do they help out with this idea?
For sure. We're on Indiegogo. So if you just search Unusual Efforts on Indiegogo, it should pop up as the first and only thing. You can also get a hold of us on Twitter at Unusual Efforts, or you can get a hold of me on Twitter at Sonia Missio. And the other good thing about Unusual Efforts, which I don't know, I can't press this point enough, but we're not competition. We are, the way I like to describe it is, we're sort of the academy team that are getting our writers prepared for the first division team. So, I mean, there's no reason not to like us.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, listen, the veterans are looking over their shoulders as we speak. I hope they are anyway, because they should be. Quickly, Unusual Efforts, where did that come from? The whole name, I like it. Where did it come from?
Actually, Kirsten came up with it, and it was the idea that women should not have to put in unusual efforts in order to do the same job as men do. So.
Right. Well, listen, Sonia, good luck with this. Let's talk about this again in maybe a few weeks' time, see where you're at with it.
And I would love to.
We'd very much
you.
Help you. We'd love to help you with some exposure here, because I think, as I mentioned, it's a great idea. So thanks so much.
Thank you, guys. I really appreciate it.
Cheers.
That is Sonia Missio. You can follow Sonia on Twitter at Sonia Missio. And you know, in the world is changing, obviously, in many ways. We are seeing more female writers than we had done in the past. JMO, you know, Laura Armstrong, Toronto Star.
Very good beat reporter.
Excellent writer.
Yeah.
We've had Amy Lawrence in here.
We have.
Who's, you know, very respected overseas, wrote a book about Arsenal's Invincibles. Yep. But still, they're a fraction compared to the men, obviously.
Yeah.
And like I mentioned, there's a lot of talent sitting there waiting to get their chance.
Yeah, and it sounds like this is an opportunity to sort of mentor and give sort of like a network opportunity for these, for aspiring women writers. And, you know, it's unfortunate that they sort of need something like this, but it's the way of the world, unfortunately. But hopefully this will go a long way towards changing it. So it's a great project. When Sonia sort of contacted me about it, you know, I jumped at the chance to get her on the show, because we're always looking to have, you know, better female representation on the show. Which
there's a few in the on. You have a few right now for Sportsnet, right?
Sandra Prusina,
yeah.
She writes a
just
she
Sandra,
wrote one.
I thought there was a
no, just Sandra, her.
Okay, well, just her. Geez, JMO.
Well, it's
get with it, man.
I'm trying my best. No, and Sandra's really good, and she writes a weekly piece on women's soccer on a whole variety of issues. Mm-hmm. So she's great, and no, but we've had. We've had Alison Bender on the show. We've had Amy Lawrence on before. So
Aline Murataki. She's back in Germany now, I believe.
She is she really?
For a while, yeah.
And, there you go.
Had her on the show a while back as well. All right, listen, we're out of time. It is getting down to the wire across Europe.
It sure is.
Man, the Premier League on Sportsnet continues this weekend. A couple of games for you on Saturday. Watford against... someone who I totally forget
Stoke,
right now.
It?
Stoke, yes.
Yeah.
It's Stoke. I'm actually going to be on the desk for that, so I should probably
yeah, you should probably know that.
That's my, after this podcast today, that's what I'm doing today. I'm going to start my research. And we have Swansea Villa. Villa. So that's a big game for Swansea, a huge game.
It is, yeah.
Big ones on Sunday across the network. Big ones. We've got two derbies for you. Sunderland, Newcastle. That's a relegation tussle, maybe the biggest in a generation, some people are saying, including me, on a feature that will air on the website
tomorrow,
Friday, right?
Yep.
And also possibly on the show on Sunday. And we have the Manchester Derby as well on
Which
Sunday.
Be very interesting.
Again, a battle for fourth place.
You're enjoying that a little too much.
Where's my team? My team's like in seventh, right, or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway. And we also have my team actually in action against Southampton.
Yeah, which I'm looking forward to that. I think that should be a fairly cracking and open game as well. So
it's what they call a Super Sunday.
Yeah, it is.
A Super Sunday.
Very much so.
And a Bundesliga, of course, throughout the weekend, of course, on Sportsnet World as well. And as we discussed already in this show, Bayern Munich, they're going to win the Bundesliga, I would say.
Yep.
But obviously a lot to hope for on the European stage as the farewell to Pep continues. Thanks, JMO.
No worries.
Our thanks to James Sharp and all things Leicester, Sonia Missio on Unusual Efforts, to John Molinaro. I'm James Sharp. Cheers for listening.